When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, my name is Gary Mansfield, and this is the Ministry of Arts podcast, where each week I'll be speaking to a different artist. Now let's begin by bagging these bongos. Hello, how are you? You'd be pleased to know I'm back inside in the comfort of the studio this week after last week's little ramble chat in homage to Mr. Adam Buxton. And I've got to say, you lot lapped him up. I must have had like 5 or 6 times more messages than I'd normally get. Still can't believe I got him. Superb. But before I go any further, as ever, Patreon supporters, thank you very much for your support. We would not be able to produce this podcast without you. And yes, this content is free for everyone, whether you support us on Patreon or not. So for the first 2 years of this podcast, it was all self-funded. The equipment, the travel, and it got to a point where we almost had to stop the podcast. So we started a Patreon, and thanks to those guys, we're still afloat. So as I say, we couldn't do it without them. So if you'd want to support for as little as £3 a month, you can go over to the Ministry of Arts Instagram page and follow the Patreon link in their profile. But again, if you're not able to, absolutely fine. This content is free for everyone. A little like or share on social media would do just fine. But anyway, back to episode 121. So this week, I'm taking you to meet Edie Baker. Now in this episode, I tell Edie that I first saw her work about 2 months ago, which on reflection was quite incorrect. It was more like 5 or 6. I first became aware of her work via an Instagram post by MC Lammas. She was posting about the artist that's going to be in a all-female group show at the Fulham Town Hall, which, I should add, if you wasn't aware, it's now been extended up until the 20th of May. But anyway, Edie. Her work is quite humorous, visually, with a definite little sprinkle of mischief. And reminiscent of the work of Sarah Maple, Edie's work draws you in with the humour and intrigue. And once you are drawn in, it's as if there's a unwritten small print that sort of says, I'm glad you find my work humorous. You're meant to. But are you laughing with me or at me? And if you realise that you're laughing at the work, then you've inadvertently put yourself on the side of the fence that artwork like this is pushing against. Love it. Anyway, before I introduce you to Edie, let me just read you a couple of bits of text. Specialising in collage, contemporary artist Edie Baker creates new narratives from predominantly ephemeral images sourced from magazines, books, or those discarded on the street. Larger works are created by digitally printing previously treated images onto stretch canvases, which are then embellished with shapes, patterns, and forms that enhance or detract from certain areas of the original. content is often brutally cut or edited, resulting in final pieces that speak more of what is absent rather than what is present. This treatment leads to work that is sometimes awkward, sometimes humorous, sometimes provocative, but almost always surreal. Sums it up perfectly. So please, come and join me and Edie Baker when we had our chat over Zoom just a few days ago.
Again, I'm not, I don't mind that much if I don't sell. It'd be great. It would be obviously the dream, but I'm just going to keep making stuff anyway because I just like it.
Perfect. That's the perfect way to think.
I mean, yeah, I sell prints here and there, but of course, it would be absolutely fucking great if I could sell my work and pull off the big bucks. That would be amazing. But, you know, at the moment, I'm working 2 days a week in a florist and coffee shop. Nice. That costs my studio rent and gets me a bit of extra for materials and stuff. So I'm doing all right, but it would be nice to just be able to, you know, I like working there, but it'd be nice to be able to leave and then I can just art all day. That would be the dream.
Yeah, cool. I mean, some people I speak to on here, they like having the part-time work because that gets you back out into the world because, you know, the life of an artist is generally solitary.
Oh yeah, I'm just like that. I will spend, you know, 6 days in my studio. I won't even eat. I'm just loving it. It's actually not very healthy. And you know, even my mates get really pissed off at me. They're like, "Why are you not coming out? You're just in your studio all the time."
Nice.
And then I just go the opposite, and I'm out and I'm ready. So actually, working in that shop, as much as I might complain sometimes, it is good because I'm talking to people. And I'm, you know, and it's been great over lockdown as well. A lot of my friends have been made redundant or they're just stuck in the house. And we've been open the whole time at the shop. So I've had that human interaction and it has been good, actually.
Nice. Mm-hmm. How long have you been out of uni?
4 years.
And have you been creating all of that time?
Yeah, non-stop. Haven't stopped. I did get a studio when I left in Elephant and Castle, but it was just like, it's just a little hole. It was under one of the railway arches, but it was just artificial lights, no windows, didn't even have a proper sink or anything. And it was really expensive. And then I stopped for a bit and it did knock my practice a bit. It did put me off.
Yeah.
So I've just left uni and was excited to get into this world of like, I'm going to be an artist. I'm going to be in my studio in my life. Out of London squalor. It's going to be great. And then actually I just was like, oh, it's really expensive. And like, no one really gives a fuck what I'm doing.
Yeah.
It put me off for a bit. And now I've got my new studio. I've been in there for about 8 months. And oh my God, my studio is my boyfriend. I'm absolutely in love with it.
Excellent. So, yeah.
I've been there about 8 months now, but it's getting demolished soon and I'm heartbroken.
Oh, man. Whereabouts is that?
It's just in Leagate. It's in an old like tower block. It's just perfect for me. I love it.
Oh, man, that's cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, you may be aware, but I've got 7 questions that I ask each artist.
All right.
And the first being, how would you explain what you do to someone that doesn't know your work?
This is a tough one because I think I've tried to over-explain it and over-art it for a while and I've gone back to basics. I think I like cutting stuff up. I love it. A lot of collage. But I just enjoy changing my scalpel blade and getting into some old magazines and books and just cutting stuff up. I just like doing it. I guess all my work has a undercurrent of feminism, and I'd say it's quite humorous and cheeky and playful. So I use a lot of 1970s porn magazines. That's kind of where I'm at the moment.
Yeah.
And I'll, brutally cut bits out and just play around with images. I just like playing around with stuff and changing the narrative of an image that already exists, I guess.
So you got a justified porn stash.
Oh my God, I've got one stash. Oh, you'd love it. It's massive. Honestly, some of the stuff in there is just wild. But a lot of it, I mean, I started off collecting like 1960s, 1970s stuff. So it's quite tame, really.
Yeah. You know,
it's just a bit of side boob. It's nothing too graphic. And really, I just started doing it, using it, because I just like the grainy images, and I just like the colours.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've always cut out old books, and I actually moved into a house. We'd been in there for a couple of weeks, and I just found under the stairs, I found a little bit of like a little key thing, and I thought, what's that? And I realised it was a trap door. So I'd been in there 2 weeks, had no idea. Went downstairs. There's this whole room in the cellar, and it was just full of like 70s porn mags.
No.
Yeah, and they were mint condition, right? I'd like Lord Magazine, Mayfair, you know, the top of the range ones, really nice. Wow. And then from there, it just grew and grew.
Did you not find that a bit creepy, first of all?
Oh, yeah, there were dolls' houses down there and all kinds of... It was,
oh, man.
Dark, really dark.
That's like a movie, isn't it?
I know. I actually told the landlady, and it was her dad's house. He'd just passed away, and she was just like, I don't want to know, just take them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'll just describe my work as cheeky and fun and... playful, surreal.
Well, I've got to say, I only saw it for the first time about 2 months ago, possibly, when MC was posting a couple of bits and pieces on you. And I almost cheer when I see a good piece of artwork that is humorous, because there's not enough of it about. Well, Sarah Maple's work, it always makes me smile. Even if it's a serious work, I know that it's not always going to be dark, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree with you there. I think there's a lot of, I've struggled myself with trying to justify what I'm doing, you know, and trying to explain what I'm doing. And I've really tried to kind of overanalyze my own work. And sometimes, you know, you just want to make stuff and put a smile on people's faces or have a bit of fun with it. And I do think my work has really dark undertones. It's, you know, if you really got into my psyche, you'd be like, oh, this is actually... quite brutal, but my work is...
Yeah, your mind is like the cellar that you found.
My mind is that dirty cellar. It really is.
Did you actually find one? Or did you just take a trip inside your own mind?
But yeah, I think you're totally right. There doesn't all have to be really serious. And I've struggled because I've felt like, am I doing the right thing? And do I need to take myself more seriously? But I don't know, I get quite good feedback a lot of the time, so maybe not. Can you say that?
Right, so I agree totally with what you've just said. I myself, I don't take this serious world too seriously all the time. And that doesn't reflect in my work. And I have conflicts with that my work doesn't reflect me as I feel it should do. But yeah. I've met you, I've spoke to you, we had a damn good laugh, a private view last week, and your work perfectly represents you.
You think so?
Perfectly.
That's so
I had the benefit of spending 10, 15 minutes chatting to you, and people who will just be viewing your work won't have that experience. But I'm aware that an artwork is a sort of extension of our personality or ourself, or at least something we're trying to show. And as someone who thinks that he can read an artwork through experience, then, yeah, I look at your artwork and I see what you're trying to portray.
Wow, that's really nice to hear. It's really validating, actually. I think, but it's interesting, though. It's the same as you were just saying about your work doesn't reflect your kind of maybe lack of being, you know, seriousness all the time. Your work does look quite heavy. And it's beautiful, but it doesn't look, come across as humorous, you know?
Yeah.
And you see yourself as quite, you know, a humorous guy, don't take things too seriously. I guess I am really confident, and I will chat to people, and my work probably definitely does reflect that side of me. But I think when I'm on my own in the studio, I'm not laughing while I'm making these pieces.
No, basically. Of course not.
You know, it's I've got my own interpretation of what they mean and what they mean to me. And that's, again, comes down to narrative. I don't think I do anyway, try to push a narrative on a viewer ever.
Yeah.
I've made something, I have my own personal connection with that piece, and I've made it, it's come from me. So I'm always going to have my own kind of private bond with it.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to hear the different ways that people interpret it themselves, you know? I mean, everyone kind of sees that it's humorous and it's cheeky, but I think I've had some really interesting conversations with people before where some people can see that it's dark and others can't. It's just, yeah, I don't...
That's perfect. I don't think that you should be telling... Oh, sorry. I don't think that an artist should be telling their whole story on an artwork, because then that doesn't leave the viewer any room for interpretation.
Well, then why make a piece of artwork?
Exactly. You might as well just buy a piece of text telling them what it is.
I agree, yeah.
And I think it's perfect that someone walks away and says about, oh, that works a little bit dark and sinister, and someone else goes, are you joking?
There's a polarity in it. I think that's in my work as well, you know, that happy, cheery, smiling, naked women and bright colours, and then actually, is it all shiny and happy?
Yeah.
Probably not. It's from these grotty old magazines.
Exactly.
Massively sexist. I'm using imagery that is from a time that we all kind of just want to forget about, really.
Yeah. I know it's not a phrase that...
Not that I was there, but...
It should be used. And it's a phrase that gets bandied around a lot, but it was a different time. I'm not justifying what was done and what was said, but it was a different mindset. It was acceptable then, it's not now. Shit moves on, you know.
But then I think to myself, that has it moved on? Does it present in different ways?
Yeah, is it just covered up?
And then I think, shit, am I actually like exacerbating the problem here? Because I'm just rehashing all of these images, and does it look like I'm glorifying the actual magazines themselves rather than editing the pictures? You know, I struggle with it sometimes, because I think I actually got censored from a show once in Deptford. They said, oh, you can't hang these two pieces of work. It was similar to the pieces that are up in the show at the moment, two full page spreads of these topless women. And again, they were quite tame images. It wasn't nothing too graphic. But a woman had a problem with one of the images because it had some text on it that described the woman in the picture as being a secretary, as that was her job. And that was the bit that she found offensive.
For fuck's sake.
It wasn't the nudity. It was the fact that it was a nude woman and her job was, she was a secretary.
Yeah.
And she was just like, well, that is so offensive because, you know, is that just saying that... all women who are on page three, all they can do is be a secretary. And I just thought, hang on, you are part of the problem here. Actually, I wouldn't even have picked up on that.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's not what feminism is about. I think be a secretary, be a stay-at-home mum. Get your tits out, don't get your tits out. Yeah. It's all okay. It's about choice, isn't it? It's about options. And it's quite interesting that a lot of the kind of more criticism I've had about using these types of images has been from women. You know, in a way that I wouldn't have thought it would be. It's not even women complaining about the nudity. It's more about, job roles and kind of. It's been really strange to me. And then I question myself. I think, am I being offensive now using these images? Yeah. I've asked question myself a few times.
I mean, the collage that you create, a lot of the time you will take. You cut out either the entire body from an image and place another image underneath. Sort of
negative space and...
Exactly.
Absolutely. And I'm always interested in what's not there. That's where the excitement comes from.
I agree.
And, you know, a lot of the time I do use the positive images and then, you know, embroider on top or embellish it. But most of the time I'm focusing what's gone, what's missing. I think that's where all the beauty is. And, you know, I pick stuff up off the street all the time. It's just, it's the ephemera and the old billboards, you know, and you've got like a palimpsest and it's these like tens of years old, like layers of images and ripped away and peeled away. That is really what I get excited about, for sure, because it's everywhere. It's absolutely everywhere. You walk down the street and it's, most people wouldn't take it in. I'm just trying to recreate that, I suppose.
But Sarah Maple show, did you go to Sarah Maple show last year in Jealous?
I didn't. I was on the Isle of Wight. Cool. I was gutted. I am a fan of Sarah's.
Well, it was her collages that blew me away there. She had half a dozen collages on the wall down the left as you walk in. Yeah, it was those that blew me away. I mean, I love a collage, mainly because it was one of the things that I was allowed to do when I was away.
Yeah.
All right, you weren't allowed the blade, but we all had a blade, you know. The toothbrush got in the way a bit as we're trying to... Because I was a changed man, you know.
Did you have real old scissors, or did you have those wibbly wobbly scissors?
Neither.
Nothing.
We weren't allowed neither. We used to break the blade out of a razor blade head, like pull that apart, and then just have to.
You think if they're not going to give you plastic scissors?
Yeah, they give you it to shave with some of the gels. Yeah. You have to sort of give your razor blade back in, but. Yeah. You know,
I just wouldn't have thought that if they're not going to give you some craft scissors.
But everyone had a little blade stashed away, not for anything sinister. So I would just cut stuff out just with razor blade, and that was a good way then to create work.
What materials were you using?
Just PVA and magazines.
Yeah, just you said magazines.
Yeah, I had a stack like yours, I can tell you. I was trying to open them up from there.
That's actually what I'm doing at the moment. I am actually working with the pages that have been stuck together. I've been going to car boot sales and I've been getting really gnarly old magazines. I know it's a bit much, but that's where I'm going.
No, it is much, but that reaction that I got when you done it, that's the reaction that you fucking want.
Oh, yeah, but it's like, oh, God, really? That cringe, that...
I mean, even if you just stuck your own together with PVA.
Which is what I've been experimenting with.
Good.
Because it's a bit cleaner for me.
Yeah.
But, yeah, again, that comes back to the palimpsest, the layers, the negative space, the bits that are missing. That, you know, I'm buying these old magazines and now it's just got this deeper meaning, right? But it's that ripping the pages apart, because I'm actually doing that act. I'm creating that, you know, new image from the pages ripping apart. You know, it's really interesting. I just like fucking with images.
Yeah, there's a conflict there with the pages being stuck together with... Yeah. Real glue, whatever you want, you know, there's a thing with the pages being stuck together and you using them from a feminine stance.
Oh, yeah.
There's something poetic and beautiful in amongst that vulgarity, isn't there?
Absolutely.
You know,
and dark and empowering, taking ownership. And,
yeah, exactly.
You know, I never go to make a piece of work and I think this is my intention. This is what this piece is going to look like at the end, and it's going to mean this. I don't go in with any of that. I just fuck about, and then I see what happens. Wow, I didn't even realise. Well, why did I stick a picture of a dog next to that picture of a tree? Why have I done that? And then I think, and then I learn a bit about myself.
Exactly.
My subconscious has just spat that out.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
That's why I don't want to push my narrative on anyone else, because I want every viewer to go away and have their own little story about what it means to them. And,
perfect.
You know?
Did you always have art in your home growing up?
I've come from a very arty parents. So that's, I mean, definitely has influenced me and inspired me, but I'd like to think I'm my own separate, I was going to say entity, that's a bit of a strong word, isn't it? I'm my own entity.
it fits, so...
Yeah, both my parents went to St. Martin's and then both taught there. You know, definitely made me feel like it was like an achievable thing for me to want to be an artist. But but then again, that brings me back to that other thing that I've struggled with. I can draw, like I can.
Yeah.
You know, I'm decent, but I choose not to. And I had that battle when I was doing my degree, because I did a painting course and I was surrounded by a lot of people who are really incredible painters, some of them quite classical. You know, I'm doing these like porn collages blown up on a digitally printed on a canvas, a meter tall, and then sewing onto it. And I had a lot of people saying, well, don't you think you should be doing a graphic design course? And I was just, it would just really piss me off, because it's like, I am painting, I'm just doing it without the paint.
Yeah, like, now I see that all the time. In your room at the Fulham Town Hall, is Holly, when I looked at hers, I see it as drawing. I don't see it as embroidery.
Amazing. Well, Holly's work, it's like it's almost like, it's even like cartography, isn't it? It's kind of like map making. It's that A to B and this kind of mathematical lines and all these female forms. I just thought it was great. Like, I kind of like it when I get blisters from the sewing. I use yarn, and so I use quite a big needle. And I'm actually allergic to lanolin that's in one.
Oh, okay, wow. So,
like, I will be working on these pieces, and my fingers will be red raw. I'll get blisters, and my lips will be swollen. I'd be like, oh, God, I've got blisters. Actually, I'm going, yes, like, look how much work I've done. It's like
a little... brilliant.
Corner, you know?
Yeah, of course.
The sewing machine's too quick for me, and it doesn't give me enough time to think about what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Kind of, I don't want to churn out. And with my collages, where it's just paper stuck on paper, I like to be able to churn them up quickly, and I like that, you know, it being quite an instant result.
There's something quite beautiful about inaccuracy of the hand as well, isn't there? I think, anyway.
Absolutely, because you're not going to get every stitch perfect, you know. It's not going to come out like a machine would, and again I like that rough and ready sort of handmade feel.
Yeah.
And that's also why I sew, because it's that I'm always kind of working with the polarities of, you know, expectations of women. And, you know, that's why a lot of the time with the porn, I'm combining that with the sewing, because it's like, oh, you know, get your tits out and be this, have this perfect body and be this sexy, you know, foxy woman.
Yeah.
And then actually, you know, stay at home and learn how to sew and cook for the kids.
Yeah.
And so combining those two things is just really fun and exciting. And I've got loads of family cookbooks, and again from the 70s, and how to be the perfect housewife. And oh, it's just hilarious. So many of the headlines in there are like, listen up, fatties, here's how to make your dream man love you. Just drink soup for a week. You know, it's just all these like really offensive but hilarious articles and stuff. And then combined with the porn.
I agree. There's a few artists on Instagram, a few artists, everything. I think it's fucking artists. There's like a few models and presenters and that on telly, female, that also show themselves before they put the makeup on and say, girls, look, it's paint. You know, I've made myself look like picture B. I'm really picture A, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's fucking amazing. Hats off, yeah.
Me too. We need more of that. You know, and I think men do as well, actually. Let's give men some credit here. You know, there's a lot of, you know, there's also, let's get a six pack and be really muscly. And there's pressure on men as well. And I think that we need to talk about that more.
Yeah. I fight that pressure all the time. In between pucker pies.
So do I. Do you know what I mean? I'm quite comfortable with it myself now. I'm pretty happy. But I do think there's a lot of pressure on men as well. And again, I could make work that was really feminist and like, oh, you know, fuck the patriarchy, and I could run with these adverts that I've got, and I could really push it. But I just like, let's have a laugh.
Yeah. You know, and like Sarah says, she makes them big, bold, heavy statements in a humorous way.
Absolutely. I think it's just a healthy way to look at the world. I think we're absolutely bogged down with, you know, there are awful things happening in the world. I'm not saying ignore them, but I'm just saying that there needs to be some kind of relief sometimes, and it's needed.
The way to look at it is you're just the other side. You know, there's plenty of people out there making a dry, honest, direct guide to feminism. Right. And you're just taking it. Saying the same words from a different angle. Perfect.
Definitely. We need polarity in all of it. We need the balance.
Yeah, and as ignorant as it sounds, I've become more aware of it. Now my daughter has come into teenage years, you know. You know, some may say you should have done, you know, should have thought of it before.
Oh, you didn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
But it's the same with everything. You know, most of the time you're not aware of situations that are in front of you because they don't affect you, you know.
Yeah. But it's everyone has their own journey, and everyone is going to discover stuff about themselves, or their own views on the world are going to change as we grow. Like, that's what's going to happen. So you didn't think of something before, well, you didn't think of it. You know? All you can do is just keep open-minded and keep being open to other people's opinions. That's all we can do.
I agree. So
Let's make people laugh sometimes and be serious, you know? I'm making work that I think is dark and quite serious, tip for me. But actually, what am I doing? I'm sat there sewing, like a 1950s housewife, actually.
Yeah.
You know? there's humour to be found in all of it.
What, do you know when it was you decided you wanted to be an artist?
I don't think I didn't ever want to be an artist.
Brilliant, love it.
I don't remember a point when I went, oh, that sounds like a good job. Because
yeah.
Really, it's really hard. You know, if I wanted to make money, I would have, you know, would have gone on done something else, really. It's just, it's cheesy in it, but it's just a calling. It's just, I've got to do it.
Yeah.
I have to do it. It's a compulsion.
Yeah, you haven't got to explain why. If it's inside.
Oh, God, I'm hungry for it. I'm never satisfied. I just want to keep making the next thing. And I think I've always been like that. I mean, I remember, like, the best day ever would be when I'd go to Woolies and I'd get a pack of 100 felt tips, you know, and I'd have a fresh pack of felt tips. That was, like, the best thing ever. You know? So exciting. And, you know, I've always been like that.
Well, it was like someone said to me, it was during an interview, I was on someone else's podcast, and they said, like, you know, how much of my time is taken up per day doing or thinking about art? And I just replied, well, it's like smelling, tasting, seeing, hearing. It's just there all the time. I don't think about it. It's just in me now. It's part of me. Everything I look at is art.
Do you think that that's always been the same for you? Do you think that that's always been a part of you?
I had no interest in art until I was like 27, 28.
I've heard you say this before, right? But what I mean is, do you think, I really believe that you're born a creative or not. I don't think that if you're born not a creative that you can't be creative, but I think you're a creative.
Yeah, well, that is similar to what I said to someone once again on another podcast. I said, I feel like I've always been creative, but I've never really created anything.
Yeah.
So I always had like this little, I know for sure that I was thinking differently to my mates.
Yeah.
You know, I would often go, oh, that looks nice, but I wouldn't tell my mates because I'd get fucking slapped down, you know. Yeah, it never, maybe, again, it was possibly just a calling that I found at the right time.
Well, I think people are born creative or not. And again, I don't mean, oh, if you're not born creative, you know, you're bad at art or you can never draw anything. Because I don't think it's about technical skill a lot of the time. I think it's about how you see the world. Again, like you just said, you know, or that little bit of litter on the floor, or, you know, and that tiny bit of text that you see, or all of those things that filter in and just having a different way of looking at things and a different appreciation is the difference. It's not about how well you can draw.
And that's what it is now, because when I'm out, like my other half has no interest in art whatsoever, especially mine. And, but when we go out, you know what you said about that little bit of paper, it might go, I might go, oh, look at the way that rubbish is coming out the bin.
Yeah.
And she would go, it's fucking rubbish coming out the bin. But then that's just me, that's just one of my instant thoughts coming to the surface.
Yeah.
You know, if I was out with my mate Lee, who's an artist, he'd go, oh, yeah. You know, because we've sort of grown up in our art relationship together, so we sort of, not think alike, but we know where each other's coming from, you know?
It's the same sort of appreciation for that ephemeral and stuff, and the visual information that's just everywhere as well, in especially, like, for me, growing up in Southeast London, you're just fucking surrounded by it.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of people you just get on with your life and you keep your head down, you get on the bus and you're on your phone and you go home and you have your tea and that's your life. But yeah. I'm picking stuff up all the time, or I'm excited by it. And it's given me so much inspiration. You know, as I said before, I lived on the Isle of Wight for a year and I loved it. I liked being by the sea and it was good for my soul, but there was nothing to look at.
Yeah.
There weren't bits of stuff everywhere and an old chicken box on the floor with a dead pigeon next to it. You know, you need all of those things. They influence me anyway.
Beauty sometimes just isn't enough, is it?
No. Sometimes I don't want to look at a gorgeous rolling field. I want the field to have litter flying through it. Not because I want litter in the world. I want to think about things. There's nothing I love more Then finally someone's shopping list on the floor. It gives me so much joy.
Brilliant.
Who is that person, you know?
Yeah, there's a story there.
Why have they gone to the shop to get eggs and paper clips? What are they doing?
How are they going to pin a fucking egg to the wall?
Yeah, it'd be the next banana on the wall. See, it's just my mind is constantly 100 miles an hour thinking about, I don't know, a leaf that I saw 2 weeks ago. Oh, God, what if I got that leaf and then I did this and then I did that? It's just going, going, going. It's just never ending, so...
Could you imagine if you had a team of artists underneath you who could make your work for you? And that, you know, that's why these artists are so prolific, because they have that same active imagination, but they haven't got to spend a week going to look for these certain type of leaves, comparing them. Yeah. You can just go to someone, right, you're tasked with finding these leaves. These are the sort I want, and this is what I want you to do with them.
Got ya. First of all, I will not knock it if that's how other people work, because a lot of the time your artwork's about the idea. I get that. For me, absolutely no chance.
That's fair enough.
I had my degree show and I had to sew. I did a diptych. They were both a meter and a half squared, these canvases, and I wanted to cover them in embroidered dots, you know, like hand sewn dots, and my mum offered to help. My friends offered to help. I was like, nope, I will do it till my fingers bleed. I've done, and I probably sewed about 500-600 circles, you know, maybe the size of a 2p. God, it took me weeks, but there's no chance. I feel like, I don't know what it is. It makes me feel uncomfortable.
Unauthentic.
I'm watching it. It's my baby. I'm making it. It's mine. It's not cooked yet. It's not ready.
I'm not knocking that at all. It's just that.
And you know, sometimes I think, God, it would be great if I could do this huge project and have people helping me, because it would probably look a lot better and get done quicker.
Yeah.
But I've got too much of a close bond with the work that I'm making, and it's my little personal bubble, and I'm not ready to open that up.
Yeah, that's fine.
Not from in a gallery space where people want to look at it, but I'm not ready for that.
That's a perfect answer. Edie, if there was you and five other artists, past and present, what would your ideal group show be?
Oh, that's a hard one. Rauschenberg.
Nice.
100%. Franz West. I want to say Sarah Lucas, but I'm not sure if I'd want to work actually with Sarah Lucas. I don't know. But Sarah Lucas, who else? Do you know what? It's a funny one. I want to say Hannah Hock, and I don't like Hannah Hock's work. I don't.
And what is it that you do like about her?
It would just be exciting, because she did something so, she was a pioneer, wasn't she? You know, she did something so absolutely bonkers. And I'm not a fan of her work, but I would just love to meet that sort of like Dada proper pioneer and also just ask her, where did you get all your material and all of this and that? You know, it's interesting.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people say Tracy Emin on here and use that same theory afterwards. They say, you know, I'm not a fan of her work, but I'd like her in my show.
I would not have Tracy Emin in a show with me. No way. It'd be a nightmare. But I would love to have her around the dinner table. Yeah. That would be brilliant. I've had a little bit of an obsession with Tracy Emin over the last 6 months, actually, over lockdown. And I've been like watching, I've watched like all of her interviews again and again and again. But I think it's the caricature of a caricature of a caricature. Yeah. And I'm just really like watching her. I think she'd be difficult to work with, which is not even a bad thing.
No.
You know, I just think, Do it yourself. You go for it, babe. I'm gonna stay over here.
Yeah,
you know, quite difficult. But I actually do like a lot of her work. Funnily enough, I've read that book, Strangeland, right? Because you know, Dreamland in Margate.
Okay.
So because she was brought up in that hotel in Margate, yeah. Which is kind of near there. So it's just a kind of bunch of not necessarily essays, just kind of. Well, confessions, I think they call them, and just little stories and bits from her past. But I'm not like, I haven't warmed to her. Yeah. I'm just really fascinated.
Yeah.
Why does that absolute black poison, like, where does that come from? Like, she's so dark and it's so, I'm just drawn to it.
Yeah.
You know, because I've had a bit of a fucked up childhood myself. Really fucked up. And so it's all kind of...
Maybe you can see little bits of yourself in her, eh?
Well, I do.
Or experiences, at least.
Absolutely, I do. But she's had similar sorts of experiences that she's then chewed up and spat out in a totally different way to me.
Yeah.
No, I'm like, let's get some tits out and let's talk about this and talk about sexism a bit and a bit of sexual assault and let's go there. But, like, let's use really bright pink and really bright red and make it a bit cheeky and maybe a woman with a cat's head instead of her own head and make it a bit, just have a bit of fun with it.
Yeah.
She's taking it and she's really bitter and angry at the world and then says she isn't. And that's what I'm a problem, you know?
Yeah, she's got her own world. She's made Tracy Emin world and you can either come into it or not. You know, enter it at your fucking peril, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
What would you do if you wasn't an artist, Evie?
Cook, definitely cook. I'd get a little food truck and I'd just bounce around, handing out dumplings on all the beach. That's what I'd do. I'd do something with food for sure. I'm a big cook. I love it.
Yeah. Good, that's a good enough answer. We started this conversation with you saying you've got several shows coming up. Are they in the near future?
Yes. Got one in about 4 or 5 weeks in Shepherd's Bush.
Nice.
And then I've got one on my third show of the year on Old Compton Street at the end of June, start of July, which I'm really excited about. That's like the dream, isn't it? Have an art show in Soho.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
I've made it. And then I've got another one in Whitechapel. My friend's got a production agency and he's opening up new studios. So it's going to be like it's like a launch / private view / big party. So this one's not too fancy. The last one's in a gallery in Soho. This one's more of a launch thing, but it's going to be great. And then I've got one in a gallery in Cornwall, in Penzance.
Nice.
It's part of a group show. I'm really looking forward to it.
Nice.
It's a really nice gallery space. You know, and Sandra Blow, right, she works there in that area. So, and I'm a big fan of hers as well. So it's really nice to be kind of making art in the same place.
Yeah, nice. Excellent.
And then I'm curating my own show with a friend of mine in Peckham in September.
Oh, wow.
Which is going to be great. It's going to be like, bring your own booze, have a look at some good young emerging artists.
Brilliant.
Yeah, and maybe buy a print or two, please.
Well, Edie, that's all my questions asked. Thank you very much for the time. And if anyone wants to see your work at the moment, when this comes out, it will still be on at the Fulham Town Hall in Art of the Age of Now. Thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome.
I'll see you later, everyone. Have a great day.
Bye.
All the best. Bye-bye.
See ya.
There you go, Edie Baker. How good was that chat? Speaking to Edie, I mentioned that I have conflicts within me that my work should be more humorous, or at least I feel my work should be more humorous. And as a result of this conversation with Edie, I've decided to make positive steps to bring that to fruition. And as we mentioned there, Edie's got a few works over at Fulham Town Hall, where the show has now been extended until the 20th of June. So from the date of the release of this podcast, you've still got a couple of weeks. But if you're not able to get there, as Edie mentioned, she's got quite a healthy calendar of exhibitions this year. But until then, trot over to Instagram and look for Edie Baker Art. Definitely a name to look out for in the future, I'll wager. Oh, and a little bit of podcast news. Buddy of the Ministry of Arts podcast, Emma Hill, has only gone and produced her own art podcast called Art Seeker Stories. It's like a Desert Island Discs for creatives. Emma invites her guests to speak about the three artworks that they've been marooned with. And as well as the three artworks, you discover that you've been marooned with a book as well. And once you've read it, you can exchange it in Luffy's book club. You just have to give a little explanation of the book as to why someone else might want to read it also. On episode 1, Emma introduces you to herself and the podcast. On episode 2,
is another friend of the Ministry of Arts, is Evie Antonio. She's a gem. And the latest episode, which is number 3, is Jeremy Morgan. And I'm looking forward to getting marooned myself one day. Go and check it out. Anyway, that's me done. Like I say every week, on whichever platform you listen to this podcast, you should be able to leave a comment. If you could do that, that really does help us get noticed and anyone else looking for an art podcast. If you've got any queries, drop us a line on social media at ministryofarts.org. If you're enjoying these episodes, spread the word of the Ministry of Arts podcast. If you're not, well, fuck you. You won't be listening to this bit anyway. And those of you that are, thanks for listening. And until next week, ta-da.
The softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.